Hello, and welcome to the monthly comic spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mann. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics, one from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, I am joined by James, and we're going to be discussing some of the comics we got in March 2021. How you doing tonight, James?
I am doing well. How are you doing, John?
I am doing pretty good. Now, this recording marks basically the end of a year without the weekly comic spotlight, because the last one of those was for March 25th, 2020.
Holy mackerel. It's been a year.
I know. It's pretty incredible, isn't it?
It has. I mean, honestly, the format's a little different, but I'll tell you what, it's so much easier because it was so hard to get the stars to align for the weekly comic spotlight. It was very difficult.
It was a bit of a grind. And the other thing I'm finding with these episodes is we're able to talk about a number of comics that we wouldn't have otherwise, because we'd be picking in advance and maybe it was a good one to pick, maybe it wasn't. Here, it's just, hey, this is what we really found interesting over the course of the month and stuff.
Exactly, because every now and then we get stuck with a stinker where we're like, oh, let's check this out, it looks cool, and then we get it and it's horrible, but we got to spend 15 minutes talking about it.
Or even if we had picked four great things in the month, there could have been a, you know, fifth or sixth that we just couldn't get to, because, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm liking the new format. I do occasionally get somebody questioning, oh, are you ever going to go back to it? Matter of fact, that popped up on the forum recently, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to say never, but currently no plans.
Hey, and honestly, it's been working for me, so I'm enjoying it, and I'm catching up on stuff that I probably should have read or should have read more of, but going back to it, it's a little bit more enjoyable. I like that. Mm-hmm. Now, even with the book club, going back, we did Why the Last Man, now we're doing Peter David's Hulk. We did a Batman, The Long Halloween, that was the one we did. And it's just a lot of fun. You get together, you talk about some things you enjoyed, that was cool, versus here's all the new stuff, you got some stuff, I got some stuff, it's not the same stuff, and narrowing it down to a certain few books that we both ended up purchasing, I think this is more fun.
Yeah, I think so too, and we should let the listeners know, we usually record this within the first week or so of the month.
Yeah.
So if they've read stuff over the course of the month and want to know what we thought about it, or if we read it or not and stuff, if they get that stuff into us by about the end of the month or a few days later, like in this case with March, the 31st was the last shipment, so obviously we needed a few days to get it and read it. But, you know, hey, we're willing to answer those questions and have that conversation in these episodes.
Definitely. Hey, quick question. Was this a light month for you? How many comics did you end up getting?
I got it's funny, I did a total of how many I got for each section. I didn't do a total overall, but I got a total of 57 comics. It felt like a light month.
It felt like a light month for me, too. I've been doing cuts in here, but I'm down to 81, which was, it's pretty low for me because I had been around that 90-100 mark, but I'm down to 81 comics, and there's a few things that they're canceled or I've already set them up to cancel, so it's going to dwindle a little bit more depending on what I add back on, new stuff.
And again, compared to what I was getting a few years ago, I mean, this is literally a quarter of it because I had weeks where I got 57 items. I mean, not many, but a few.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You used to get about 160 a month, I think?
Closer to 200.
Closer to 200. I was close. You were, like, right in front of me. Because I think you got all of Marvel, all of DC, and then you got quite a bit of the indie stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny, because a lot of that is I don't feel I've cut back on that, but kind of they stopped publishing the stuff I was interested in.
Yeah, and I think there has been a paring back. I mean, like, I go through Image, and there's some trades, and there's just stuff that I'm not interested in. And when I get to the back half, it's really, there's not a lot there. There's AWA, there's a Blaze that I'm enjoying the stuff from them. Every now and then something from Oni, but overall, there's not much back there that I'm getting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, should we dive into DC?
Yeah, let me go ahead and filter my list right now.
I only got 14 comics from DC this month.
Holy mackerel. Okay, well, you got more than me. I got 12.
Well, and part of it was coming out of Future State after, you know, Dark Knight's Death Metal or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, they've kind of sort of restarted the universe, sort of not quite, with Infinite Frontier number 0. and they've reduced the number of titles, and a fair number of these are like $4.99 or $5.99 comics. Well, I guess the $5.99 was Infinite Frontier, but quite a few were $4.99.
Yeah, quite a few.
And quite a few of these, I mean, we're only a month in, but this new era of DC is kind of feeling a little overpriced and underwhelming to me.
I honestly agree with you there. I've gotten back into some things. Now there's things that were solicited later on that didn't come out this month. Like, I jumped back on Green Lantern now that Morrison's done. But that didn't come out this month, so I'm waiting for it for next month. And I also jumped back on Wonder Woman, which I had cut previously because I wasn't enjoying it. So there were some things I added, but yeah, DC just didn't have a lot of stuff that came out. And there were some things that I did enjoy, and then some things I've just felt weird about with that $5 price point with what I got.
Well, and I know we've talked about this. I don't remember if we've done it on an episode or not, or just when we've been talking. Wonder Woman's a good example of that. The main story wasn't bad, but the backup, it felt like a kid's book kind of got shoved into a non-kid's title, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, because I'm looking at the, you know, my little scores that I was given the books, and Nightwing was probably the best of the bunch for me, but Wonder Woman was the second best book I got from DC. I was like, man, this is the Wonder Woman I've always wanted to read. I mean, she's in Valhalla, which is, you know, different pantheon, I'm assuming. But, I mean, it was a freaking cool story. So we have her fighting. We have her a rebirth. We have this love interest that happens and her trying to find her footing in this world. And I'm like, man, I love this take on Wonder Woman versus the peace warrior who never fights or does anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, I flip the page. And like you said, it's something for a 7 or 8 year old. And I'm just, or maybe a 10 year old. And I'm reading, I'm like, why are they pitching this very mature, you know, we're killing each other Wonder Woman with a very young reader book? It just doesn't make any sense. I don't want to spend that dollar for that.
Yeah, there was the juxtaposition of the two stories that really just threw me out of both stories to a degree.
Very much so.
And it was funny because with the main story, you know, going in, it's like I couldn't remember where the title left off. And, you know, as I was reading it, I'm like, well, it's okay. Neither does Wonder Woman. You know,
it's true.
And, you know, we got a good Wonder Woman and Asgard kind of story or whatnot, but it was all set up in kind of zero payoff within the issue.
Yeah.
Which is standard these days.
I felt like I was reading almost, I don't mean this in an offensive way if anyone takes it that way. I felt like I was reading Jane Foster, Thor. The way it read, you know, we're dealing with Valhalla, the afterlife and all that stuff. And with what happened with Jane Foster, I was like, man, I feel like I'm reading an issue of that almost.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really enjoying it, but I had no clue how Wonder Woman got there because I dropped the title. And then just the boom, okay, why am I reading a kid's book? You know, I almost just thumbed through the pages. I'm like, I'll know to skip this. I don't want to read this in the future, but I'm stuck paying for it.
Well, and that title, like with many, was a cold start after, again, what had gone before in Wonder Woman, where it was dealing with Maxwell Lord and his daughter and stuff. Then we had the resolution of the whole Dark Knight's death metal stuff. Then we had Future State. Then we get to Infinite Frontier Zero. And then there's this that had no connection to really any of it.
Yeah, none.
And add to that, you know, $4.99 cover price. And definitely I noticed this time around some of my ratings are, it's like it's the price factored in.
It did. And I'll tell you what, the one thing that I said, or I will say that made Nightwing the best comic for me, is it had that $3.99 price point, which I appreciated. Mm-hmm. I wasn't stuck with a story at the back. I put, great book, only $3.99. That's the first thing I put in my notes here. And Tom Taylor gave us a Nightwing we want, I feel like. You know, we don't have the memory loss. He knows who he is. He's back. And the art was great. The story was great. We get the little twist with Alfred and almost like they're setting him up to be the next Batman. I don't think they're going that way, but we already have a new Batman. But
I was going to say, there's another title of
the next Batman.
The next Batman or Second Son or whatever that's starting up in here in April, yeah.
Yeah, that little Alfred thing. Maybe like, is this going to be the new Batman?
It was nice. I really enjoyed Nightwing. It was definitely one of the best books for the month for me, and one other kind of tied with it, but both of them are properties I really like, so I wasn't surprised.
Yeah, I agree. And then we got the Batman and Detective both had a backup of, I think, Robin.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of weird because I remember we were talking before and I was like, oh yeah, Robin, what book was it in? Because I was trying to think and I was like, was it Batman? Was it Detective? You're like, oh, it was in two books. I was like, that's why. But the stories themselves were decent. I like probably, if I'm by memory, Detective a little bit more than Batman, but it's just kind of weird because you still have that broke Bruce Wayne and the Batman title and, you know, you got the Ghost Hunter. I'm not sure if I, you know, Ghost Hunter, I'd forgotten about him. It had been so long, but he's back. Damian Wayne, I like the backup with Damian Wayne a little bit.
I liked it, but the reveal at the end of the Detective Comics one.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was coming there, but I knew that reveal was coming because I'd seen online spoilers.
Yeah.
And it was one of many things this month at DC that I'm like, well, if that's happening, what does that mean for the backstory of the DC universe? Did this happen? Did this not happen? How does this fit in? There was a lot this month that really I'm just trying to refigure out the DC universe.
Yeah.
For me, the top three books, the top two were Nightwing and Crime Syndicate.
Okay.
I thought those were really good. But then Infinite Frontier Zero was right up there with it, a little below those two, but doing well. And I took a ton of notes on that. And I mean, we could probably do an entire episode just on that.
Yeah.
And maybe we should right before Infinite Frontier 1 through 6 comes out in a few months.
Hey, I'm game for that. We can definitely do a recording of that. Because there was a lot of material in there. It kind of reminded me, I know Marvel came out with this, I can't remember if it was a point one or whatever it was, but basically like a kickoff when they were doing a reboot of all their books. And it gave you a preview of where everyone is, and so you get your footing before the books came out. And I like those.
They've done that a few times. They definitely did that here, and there was a couple of things where they were sort of setting up some characters in Infinite Frontier Zero. There were a couple of things where, you know, not much really happened in those few pages.
Yeah.
And just couldn't tell, again, where they were going with certain things, and... Yeah, there's a lot to unpack in that comic, both in terms of what they did and what they kind of undid.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, we could probably spend 20 minutes just talking about this book right now without even meticulous notes on my end.
Yeah. It had some stuff I liked. It had some stuff that I was really scratching my head on. It's like, well, what does this mean for that? I'm curious where they're going with that. And, you know... I'm wondering who's steering the ship for the DC universe in general these days.
I do too.
Presumably Jim Lee.
Okay. And that's interesting because you would think Jim Lee, and I don't mean this to sound bad, would be a little more organized, but I guess this is the way they want it, or he wants it, where multiple continuities, even if they're contradictory, can be going on at the same time.
I don't know.
I don't know. I love that.
I guess for me, the modern DC of the last 10, 15 years is so different than the older DC where it didn't seem to have as many zigs and zags at a big picture level.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of things, they go down a certain path and up, no, we're going to do a U-turn and go the other way for a while. And I feel we're at kind of one of those pivot points. And we may get some great stuff after it, we may not, I don't know yet. But there's a couple of things, and it's not the first time, where it's like, if you've done this, then what was the point of this story, that story, and the other story?
Yeah. And we're supposed to be moving from the universe to the multiverse to now we're at the omniverse. And that's going to be the big push going forward, I think, the omniverse.
To me, that's all semantics. Who cares? Yeah. It should be the do we care about it verse.
I love your commentary. That is amazing.
I was really, like I said, underwhelmed by some DC stuff because overall I came out of Action Comics, Justice League, Superman, and Wonder Woman this month thinking, that was a $4.99 cover price for that?
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean by that. I mean, you know, Bendis, we got Bendis being Bendis with Justice League. You know, we get a new bad guy named Brutus. I mean, a demon-looking guy, but... I like the team members, but some are on the back burner that we didn't even get to see that much. So it was just kind of weird. And then, once again, that was one of the books where I got to the end. I had canceled or stopped reading Justice League Dark because it wasn't resonating with me. But now I got Ram V's Justice League Dark stuck on the back of my book.
Well, okay, so you got a lead story where they didn't fully set up the team and it left me wanted. Then I get to the backup, heavy use of captions, and I would have skipped it if it was a different title. So I felt I was subsidizing that to go get the Justice League.
That's how I feel. I feel the exact same way. I feel like the editors, I'm assuming Jim Lee or editorial in general, said this book with its sales number or its audience is not resonating to there where it can stand on its own. So let's slap it on this book that sells because that people will buy Justice League. And we'll just give them smaller chunks of the same story and dole out the cost a buck an issue. And I just don't like that because I don't want to read that. I don't want to read it.
I think there are ways you can make that work. A Robin featuring the back of Batman is understandable. It's hitting the same basic target audience for the most part, not entirely. But if it had been, you know, a Justice League Europe versus Justice League America kind of a thing, well, they're both Justice League or something like that, maybe. But Justice League Dark is the more supernatural, less superheroic version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's a different kind of genre to a degree. And that's where things were really not working for me. And, you know, like the Midnighter story in the back of Action Comics, it's like, why would you think I want to read that if I'm here for Superman?
Exactly. I felt the same way because I didn't want to read. It's almost like I had to read the books and judge the books, pretending like that wasn't there. But at the same time, you have to ding them for I'm paying for this thing that I really don't want to read. And it's just a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if the backup in Action or Superman had been Superboy.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would have been
one.
Now, hey, did you get Sensational Wonder Woman?
I did.
By Stephanie Phillips. Did you like that one? Was it okay with you?
It was okay, but it felt kind of like a filler versus like a meat and potatoes kind of issue.
Yeah, we get the whole dream sequence thing. And yeah, it did. It felt a little bit off.
It wasn't bad, but it's not essential reading for me, so I don't know if I'll continue with the title.
That's where I kind of felt. Like, I'm looking at my notes on this, and my last thing I wrote was not sure how long I'll stay on. That's how it left me feeling, is that it was okay, but I don't know if I want to stick with this book for multiple arcs.
And that's one of the digital first books. Another one is Truth and Justice. Did you get the second issue of that?
I did not.
For me, it was I'd gotten the first one, which was the Vixen story that I liked.
Okay.
This is a $4.99 book. I think it's doing maybe three of the digital issues combined. But it was a very heavy-handed story about racism, which was a decent story, but you know, whenever I read one of those, I'm always thinking, you know, it's really depressing that there's enough racism in the world, and there definitely is, that these sorts of stories kind of need to be published.
Yeah, like Superman versus the Klan, or they have to come out because that stuff exists.
And this was not a light touch kind of a thing on it, and you know, it's one of those that I don't even, you know, it's not a question of do I agree or disagree with any of it and stuff. It's a matter of escapist entertainment, I'd like to be a little more escapist.
I know what you mean, and that came up when we reviewed Department of Truth.
Department of Truth, yeah.
Yeah, because it's so on the nose that if I'm mentally not in the right space, I feel like I'm almost watching the news or reading the news, and that can be a little bit unrelaxing. You know, it can set you off, it can trigger you, it can be like, I don't want to read this stuff now. So I definitely have to be in the right mood to read something like that that's really heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, I was noticing the higher the price point at DC, kind of the less impressed I was by it.
I'm kind of the same boat. How about Joker? We didn't mention that. Did you get that?
I did not get that.
Oh, okay. I got Joker number one. And once again, I got the punchline story that I did. It was okay. I got it. But like, I don't know. I felt like it was a decent book, but I don't know if I'm going to stay on it for a really long time.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple of titles I just decided, nah, I'm gonna skip. The Joker one sounded to be more, I don't want to say horror-ish than I wanted, but darker than I felt like and stuff.
Yeah, the Joker one, it was like a lot of that text boxes throughout the whole thing, pictures and text boxes, and I almost was done with the book, completely done with it, and then finally they started to have dialogue, but it was like halfway through the book, and so it really frustrated me.
There's actually one comic I read this month where I went through afterwards and counted how many panels had speech bubbles in them.
Which comic was that?
You want to move over to Marvel?
Okay, Marvel it is. I think I know where you're going.
It was X-Men number 19,
okay.
And only 12 panels had speech bubbles in them, or thought balloons or whatever. And
that
it wasn't a bad story.
That's the thing. It wasn't bad, but I was like, there was no dialogue in there, or hardly any dialogue. It was weird.
I mean, the whole thing was told using captions or text pages and whatnot, but it was an interesting story. A lot happened in it, or a lot of story progression sort of happened, but there was also a bit of a reset of sorts at the end.
Yes.
Which I kind of get, kind of didn't care for, but that was the one that was really the epitome of, is nobody talking to me this issue?
That's the same thing I had on there. I'm like, this was an awesome issue, or it would have been really awesome if they just would have had a little more dialogue in between the team members that were stuck in the vault.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the action. We saw them talking about what they're doing, but it was almost like a silent issue that was not silent at all with all the text.
Well, and the text pages where it's like, okay, this is where the team does this, this happens, that happens, this happens. It's like we were getting the Cliff Notes version of the story.
Yes. Yeah. It was very heavily dialogue. But at the same time, it was very weighty, and I felt like this issue was laying the groundwork for after this whole Hellfire saga thing that's going to be happening. I think this is going to be some big key to what he's doing.
Could be.
Just because he's building it up so much, it felt really weighty to me.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. That's fair.
Yeah, but I'm with you on the it needed dialogue. That really kind of pulled me out a little bit.
It read better than I had expected, given how little dialogue it had, but there have been a number of issues where I just go through thinking, you know, like Action Comics, half the lead story was told via captions and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like modern writers have forgotten how to have people talk.
It's almost like they fancy themselves, I write novels.
They think they're a prose writer, but they're doing it in an illustrated medium.
Exactly, and they really need to look at it. No, I'm writing a comic, and comics are different. I mean, you can still use thought balloons if you want to even, but it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so anyways. what do you want to go over any highlights you had or lowlights you had?
The highlight for me was Taskmaster. We got two issues of it. I really liked that fourth one, and I like the character, so it's not too surprising. I was not crazy about how that miniseries ended, because it ended on a story beat that both kind of resolved the story but left it unresolved, which is a neat trick if you can get away with it, and I'm not sure they did, at least for me. And I get kind of why they did what they did and stuff, but I was also left wondering, is this going to pick up somewhere else? Is it not? What's going on? And it was basically, I'm not sure if I really liked the ending or hated the ending. It was a strong moment, though.
By the way, your commentary on Taskmaster, I picked up the trade when it's coming out. So I will be reading it. I just will be waiting a little bit to read it.
When you do, I'll be curious what you think of the ending.
Okay, for sure. I'll let you know. Anything else that stood out to you? Because
there was some other stuff that stood out, but do you want highlights or just what stood out?
All right. Either way.
There were a couple where some of the titles just weren't working for me. X-Force seemed to be devolving into a telepathic slasher film.
Yeah.
X-Factor seemed to be going like a you know, bad horror movie, you know.
Yeah.
Invaded the title.
Mm-hmm.
The Sword got a bit more involved with the King in Black stuff I cared for because I'm not reading it. It wasn't bad, just wasn't great.
Yeah.
The Non-Stop Spider-Man for me is more of a non-start Spider-Man.
I did not buy that. It wasn't good.
Really? Well, there were a couple of things. They did a diagonal slant on the art, which got really old really quickly.
Oh.
And it kind of came off like it was a way to do less art on the page. Because you take the thing, rotate it, I don't know, 45 degrees or whatever, and you know, to fit the panels on, you got to have a lot of white space around it and stuff like that. And they did like a text effect for the spider sense, which is new and not working for me as a longtime Spider-Man fan. It's like, it's never worked that way before. I don't think I pre-ordered more of that issue, that title than that issue, and I'm okay with that.
Makes sense.
Art style just didn't work for me, and this full throttle action at all costs approach, I wasn't crazy for.
Yeah, just not good.
Yeah.
Did you like, I know there was one you were getting, is the Hulk Warren Pax?
Mm-hmm.
Or Maestro Warren Pax, sorry.
I was a bit surprised by the death toll in that issue, particularly that final one. And
yeah.
Also surprised there was no short little backup in that issue.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised too. I really enjoyed it though. I thought it was mm-hmm. a good read. I thought
it was good.
An excellent read.
It's fun.
Yeah, and we are going to be reviewing Thor, but I will tell you that I did enjoy the issue.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. I don't like to say too much about that one, just because we are going to be reviewing it, and I want it to be completely fresh for you as you walk into it.
Cool.
Now,
cool.
Did you get Beta Ray Bill?
I did not.
Okay, that's one I did get, a new one, and I enjoyed the issue. Now, the art by Daniel Warren Johnson, you have to, it's an acquired taste. You have to know what you're getting into because it's not really my style. You know,
that's why I didn't get it.
Yeah, Wonder Woman, Dead Earth was the same thing. It's just, I look at it, it's kind of grating on me a little bit. But the story itself was decent. We look at the relationship between Sif and Beta Ray, Bill, and then with what happens in Thor, there's a little bit of animosity between Beta Ray, Bill, and Thor. And that's addressed in this issue.
That makes sense.
And so I think that's really cool. So I just like that. How about Black Cat? I know you've been enjoying that.
Been enjoying that. That one seemed to be like a pause in the overall story to set up this Queen Cat character as like an anti-Black Cat.
Yeah.
We get a ton of backstory for her, which was good. It was a good done-in-one-ish story that plays into the overall arc.
Yep.
But that's usually how that title is.
Yeah, done in one, and again, I really enjoyed it, and I like this new Queen Cat character. I like her.
Mm-hmm. She's been in some other stuff, but it was one that I didn't really remember her.
Yeah, I've never really read her or anything. One thing, I know you're not reading Captain America, are you?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, you are. Did you like this Captain America? Because I think this was a polarizing issue out there.
It was okay. It was very middle chapter-y, and I'm ready for a new writer on the title.
I am, too. I'm ready. You know, no offense, but Christopher Priest, he's writing it, right?
No. Ta-Nehisi Coates or whatever.
Ta-Nehisi Coates. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. He's writing Vampirella, which I'm ready for a new writer. Ta-Nehisi Coates, he's writing it, and he was doing good at the beginning, but he's kind of lost me a little bit here at the end. And I think this one, he got into some topics where now it's a polarizing title. And I just think, yeah, it's time for a change probably pretty soon.
This was the issue that got some news coverage because some guy is like, why am I being cast as the Red Skull?
Yeah. So I was just like, ugh.
I mean, that was lost to me when I read the issue and stuff. And
I didn't know about it until I look at it, I read it, I type up my reviews. I happened to be on Comic Book Roundup and I saw all this stuff and I was like, oh, I didn't know there was anything that bad. It just kind of went over me. I was like, oh, all right. That happened.
I mean, he's doing an okay job writing the title. It's just not the take on Captain America I want, but I'm an old school Cap fan and really liked the more patriotic action adventure than the brooding, you know, almost super spy kind of take we've been getting for a while.
Yeah, what's weird is who was writing it before Mark Waid, where he went down? Was that Spencer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, Nick Spencer went into the Hydra Cap thing,
mm-hmm.
and a really dark take on Captain America, and then Captain America kind of, it wasn't me, and all that stuff. And Mark Waid kind of gave us a palate cleanser, you know, rinse and refreshing. And then we went right back into a dark hole again.
Well, every other writer since seems to be dragging that whole thing back up.
And I'm like, no, I don't want to read the dark Captain America. That's what people didn't like. I want to read this Mark Waid refreshing, let's take Cap out of politics and just have Cap be Cap.
I mean, if you're going to go harp on the whole Hydra Cap thing and do that, I would think the way to do it would be to get John Walker back as Captain America because, well, he's a stand-up guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's some role reversal and some stuff like that you could do, but there's an aspect of, Nick Spencer did a great job with that arc, but it's been a few years. It should be a little over and done with by now, and I'd rather see Cap, you know, fighting the good fight than constantly fighting the same battle over and over.
That's exactly how I feel. So it just feels like I've been down this road before, and I didn't like it the first time, so I'm ready to go back to that Mark Waid refreshing take on Cap. I don't want to be in this dark hole anymore. I don't want to see him on the run and he's the outlaw.
I want to see a more uplifting version of the character, more hopeful.
Exactly. And I thought we were going there, and no, we went right back into it. So that's why I'm frustrated. By the way, one I know you're not reading is Immortal Hulk, and I will say it was excellent. I think the Immortal Hulk is going to be, you know, I don't want to say the definitive run, but a definitive run of the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of a deconstruction of the character, a horror take, but it's also a very, very heavy riff on Peter David's Hulk. And what's funny is because we're doing the book club, we're reading that stuff. Every time I read an issue of this, I'm like, and then I read the book club, I'm like, man, they're really kind of he's cribbing off that stuff, going back to it and recycling stuff, but he's doing it in a fresh new way. I like that.
Well, if you're writing the Hulk and you haven't read the Peter David run, you've made a mistake.
I agree. That's a really excellent run.
I'm not saying you should crib off it left, right, and center, although there's a ton of material worth, further investigation on and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I will say it's kind of interesting that on the Slack channel, there's been some comments about, man, I'm not feeling, since the X of Swords thing, I'm not feeling the X books. And I understand that because a lot of them, I was just kind of like, they're not really in a good place where I want to be, except for X-Men. I enjoyed that. The main X-Men book was good, but I'm ready for them to get their energy back and start going in a direction I want to see them going.
Yeah, there were one or two where it's just, okay, this is another middle chapter. It's okay. Did you get Children of the Atom?
I didn't get that one. I got all of the other ones, pretty much, Excalibur, Hellions, everything, but not Children of the Atom, because it looked like a bunch of weird characters and I didn't know who any of them were. Like,
well,
kids.
It's almost like a quote-unquote young X-Men a la the Young Avengers kind of title. But this was long delayed because of the pandemic. And there was a plot point where it's like, yeah, I wasn't the least bit surprised. I kind of saw that coming. And again, given it had been announced so long ago and took so long to come out, I was unimpressed.
Yeah. Oh, there was a book that sold a heck of a lot that I was not that super impressed with. That was Alien number one, which I thought it was all world building and setup and not a ton of action, happening in there. And I felt like a first issue could have been better. And it's written by the Superman writer. What's his name? I can't remember the guy's name right now, but the guy who's writing.
Brian Michael Bendis? No.
No, the new guy who's writing Superman in action, whatever his name is. You know who I'm talking about.
Well, I can find out who you're talking about. I don't remember these things.
I'm sorry. I'm testing your
Philip
memory.
Philip Kennedy Johnson.
That's him. That guy. My memory stinks, and then I put you on the spot. But yeah,
this is why I have a spreadsheet that's got all my information that I can scroll over. Oh, that's who wrote it.
Yeah. So Alien, he's writing that, which it just was okay. I'm like, I think the next issue will be better, but right now I'm just kind of like going through the motion pretty much.
Yeah. Did you read Silk?
I did. What did you think of it?
I liked it. I'm not sure where they're going, but I like the character and they did a good job with it, so it was fun. Five issues, hard to go wrong with that.
Exactly. That's the way I felt. It was solid. It wasn't great. It was good. And I found, I'm like, who is this Maureen Gu who's writing it? Because I put her name in here. I was like, I've never heard of Maureen Gu. Apparently she's a young adult or novelist out there. She writes books. But this is her very first comic work. And I thought she did an okay job. She feel like she's getting her feet under her writing comics, but she did good.
Yeah, she did well. I do want to take back one little aspect of what I said of it's five issues, how can you go wrong? Did you read Black Knight, Curse of the Ebony Blade?
I did not. Did that go wrong?
It's five issues, and this is how it can go wrong.
Okay.
So much time was spent really establishing what a loser Dane is, Dane the Black Knight. And it's like, wow, how could anyone like this character at the end of it? And I liked the character going in.
But I don't like him anymore.
Well, I mean, it seemed like none of the Avengers like him or respect him. They had a bit with his powers that it's like, I don't remember that at all. I don't know where they're going with that one, but that's one where I think, even if the writer had said, hey, here's what I'm going to do, it was beholden on the editor to say, maybe not.
Yeah.
I think it was potentially damaging to the Black Knight character.
That's not good. And now I'm happy I did not read it.
Well, now, he's one of those characters that I don't know that they would have done a Marvel movie with, but he would have been interesting to round out a team of Avengers or something in a movie.
Oh, yeah. Did you get that Captain America anniversary tribute?
I did not.
Okay, I don't know why I got it because I'm not really the guy who likes anthologies, but I got it. And I didn't like it. My notes on it were like, too many artists, I'm done with these stunts. I think I'm kind of done with the $10, we're going to have like a whole crew of people or a whole team of artists slap something together and have a jam session. I think I'm done with those books, really.
If it looks like an anthology type thing, I take a closer look and decide, do I really want this? Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And there are a lot of other things where I'm trying to be much more selective on things getting onto my list. Obviously with Black Knight, maybe not selective enough.
Hey, every now and then some junk gets through the cracks.
Well, and I stand by my decision to pick it up.
Exactly.
I don't stand by their decision to publish it as was, but, you know, hey, they didn't ask.
I guess they're making him central to the King in Black thing. That's why you're seeing Black Knight stuff, honestly.
Yeah, but he was again, I remember him from the 90s in the Avenger titles, where he was a major player and well-respected back then, and now they're treating him like he's a bit of a joke.
Yeah, I remember the way back. It was probably in the 80s when they had the Black Knight.
The 90s, yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading about him, and I liked the character, and then he just disappeared in obscurity, and I guess now he's a joke, so that's sad.
At least in this title, which is a shame, because it's his title. Yeah. If you can't get respect in your own title, I mean, come on.
That's pretty bad.
That's really bad.
Yeah, but overall, you know what the theme is here? I look at the stuff that I've read, and I kind of color code things, and I'm liking about half of what I'm reading, like really enjoying. So about half of it is like either just okay, and there was one thing that, you know, I didn't like, but overall it's just it's a little bit frustrating. I wish it was more than half of them I was really enjoying.
There were a fair number this month where it's like, yeah, this was not great. It was competent, but not great.
Yeah, and then DC's printing so much, or so little, that I get, or publishing so little, I have 12 comics, so that's all there is.
Yeah, but about a quarter of what I got from DC fell into the, I don't know about this, category.
Exactly, that's kind of terrifying. It's horrifying. They have such little, they have to hit home runs on this stuff, and I think they better do better with those backup stories if that's going to be the thing they're doing going forward, because that could pull me off a title.
Well, it's funny, because I think about a quarter of the Marvel stuff also fell into the, yeah, I don't know about this, category.
Yeah.
But one or two of them are going to end because they're miniseries. One or two of them I didn't go further with anyways, like Nonstop Spider-Man. So I don't feel too bad about it. And while I think they hit a little bump on the road on the mutant books, I think they'll right that train and be doing better soon.
That's what I think, too. Especially when I read X-Men 19, I said, okay, they're all doing this kind of middle thing going towards this Hellfire saga or whatever it's called. But I think this Children of the Vault is going to be a very pivotal thing. The book just felt weighty. And I think with Hickman being there, I think it's purposely being held back, the issue 20 and stuff like that, to keep the story and all the other books in time. That's what I think.
I don't know. I think that kind of delay is a bad idea in general.
I do too.
There have been a couple of things that by the time I got to it, it's like, how long has it been since I read this and where did it leave off? I mean, DC fell into that because of the Future State stuff.
I can tell you about one book in the indie section that did that for me.
Yeah, let's jump over to indie and let's talk about that. What was it?
A perfect little segue. I got to find it. It was Redneck by Donnie Cates. And so I was sitting there reading it and I was like, what the heck is going on? And I'm like, why do I feel this? I really like Donny Cates. I remember I was joining Redneck. Why do I not know what's going on? And I realized it's been 4 months between issues.
Well, that's funny.
And then the issue before that, it was like 2.5 months between issues. So Donny Cates has been busy on his Marvel stuff that his indie books are getting spread out for 3-4 months. And I can't remember what's happening by that time. And so it's kind of almost killed the book for me. And that's where I'm like, okay, you're not respecting me as the single issue reader. Okay, you're telling me to wait for the trade. Fine, I'll wait for the trade.
It's funny because I had a similar comment on Giga number 3 of it's been about 4 months since the previous issue came out, and that just threw me out of the story. It was an okay issue, but I spent most of it. It's like, where were we again?
Yeah, there's nothing there to catch you up. And we got to this big thing, and there was a death that happens, and something very weighty in here. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Who was that person again? Oh, what's going on? I can't remember. Just very unfortunate.
Well, in Resident Alien, your ride's here. There were some delays getting that third issue for me. So by the time I got it, it's like I couldn't really remember where things had left off and the bigger picture of the story and stuff. And I read it and number 4 kind of back to back. And it was all right, but it lacked the oomph it might have had if I was in the story.
That makes sense.
Now, keep in mind, I'm the type of guy who, when I read a novel, try to do it in, like, one or two sittings within, you know, like a 24-hour period, just so it doesn't evaporate in my brain in the meanwhile.
That makes sense.
So, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I read several indie books. That's, once again, my biggest thing. But I do have quite a few of them here that I have canceled or ended, and they've already canceled. So there's quite a bit of red in here. some of it canceled because they were short, you know, series, and others because I just wasn't enjoying it, and I've already, you know, axed the books.
Mm-hmm.
The one, Bequest number one, was a brand new one. Canceled it. Thought it was horrible. Bite-Sized finished. Deep Beyond was not enjoying it. Canceled it last month. Deja Thoris, canceled that. It's not good. Die, Die, Die. Is that the end of it? Did you get Die, Die, Die?
I got the first issue, I think. That was Kirkman's kind of surprise series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got the first issue. Wasn't able to pre-order the rest, so didn't get it.
Oh, okay. Well, I got Die, Die, Die. I guess I pre-ordered it or something. I think the last issue came out probably, like, I don't know, before COVID. I don't remember when it came out. I mean, honestly, it might have been before. But it had Barack Obama in a boxing match to the death with somebody. It was just really weird. I was like, what am I reading?
Yeah.
So it was just bizarre. I don't want to read that anymore. And then there was like several others. There's I Breathe the Body, canceled. Red Sonja, the Superpowers, canceled. Sea of Sorrows, that's the end of it. Sonja Versal, canceled. The Goon, I've already canceled it. I don't even know if it's coming out anymore. And Vampirella, I wrote it on here, time to cancel. I'm just not enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I really like the character too, so it's kind of sad.
I can understand that, though. There are a couple of things that I either sampled or am dropping. I mean, I think I'm going to cut the cord on Commanders in Crisis. I've lost interest in the series.
That makes sense. I mean, I can understand that. Now, was there anything that you really enjoyed? Because I do have things that I really liked.
Mighty Morphin was pretty good. We got finally some backstory on the new Green Ranger. Walking Dead Deluxe is still holding up. Anyone who hasn't read it, they should.
Yeah.
And I say that as a non-zombie fan in the extreme. And then I really enjoyed Comic Book History of Animation number 4, which had a good overview on kind of the business side of Saturday morning cartoons.
Very cool. Well, I will go over some that I liked with you. Okay. Black Hammer Visions I thought is really cool. This one was by Jeff Johns and Scott Collins. And they're like single issues of that creative team's take on a character inside the Black Hammer universe. I think it's really cool. Berserker came out. Did you read that?
Nope.
Okay. Berserker came out, and it's going to be a movie or something. Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a solid start, but there was no characterization or really world building. I think that'll come in the second issue. This was like pure action. And I was like, it was a thick issue, and it's just action, action. And it's very visceral violence. That's why I was like, you're not going to like it. And it seems to rely on tech. There's technology and rebuilding body, and I thought the ending of it was really cool. But I thought it was solid for me who likes more gory, graphic things.
That seemed like a summer blockbuster movie getting shopped around as a comic because they went ahead and did that to help sell the concept.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was.
So to say it got optioned for something, I think is missing the point a little bit.
Yeah, very true. It was going to be a movie regardless.
Yeah.
Now, Casual Fling came out, which I think I had talked about before. It's really good. It's a psychological thriller about cheating and a spouse, and it's the wife doing the cheating. It's just a fantastic book. If you like, I would almost say it's a thriller more than like a horror, but it's horrifying when you're reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Department of Truth, the one thing I will tell you, the last two issues, we reviewed the first five, there was the fill-in artist, and they kind of took the book off track. It was still a very good read, but what they're doing is they're doing background character building on like the tinfoil hat guy.
Mm-hmm.
So his whole background. So to give the artist a breather, time to take a break, they went and they did some background issues on some characters in the book. And then on issue 8, I think they're going to bring it back to the main artist and we're going to move the story forward. But so it was good, but it wasn't great because I'm like, all right, this is kind of like a filler, I would say.
Well, sometimes they need to do that to round stuff out and whatnot. And like you said, give the main artist a chance to kind of get back on schedule or what have you.
Exactly. Firepower, are you enjoying that or not?
Yeah, I thought it was a fun read. I mean, we're 9 issues in, and I still have no idea where it's going long term, but I'm liking it, so I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, I'm liking it too, and supposedly issue 12 is going to be a big, oversized issue. You have to read it, so I'll be there for that. It's being solicited now. There was a European comic that came out, which I believe it was a reprint of a Euro comic. It was called Carmen Number 1, and I think it was Image that it came out with. And I got a Milo Manara cover, which I really liked, but it was kind of really weird. It's about this girl, and we deal with characters that have passed to the other side and yet still roaming the earth, almost like ghosts. But
okay.
this girl didn't know she's a ghost, and someone's kind of teaching her, hey, you're a ghost, and here's what you can do. Here's powers you have. So it's a whole take on this and people making bad choices and ending up dead, and now they got to deal with the repercussions of their choice. So very different, very weird. It's a short, like, probably 4 or 5 issue series, but I'm going to see it through. Nocterra, number one. Did you get that? I think that's Scott Snyder. So you didn't get it. Okay.
No.
Scott Snyder's kind of hit or miss sometimes. Sometimes he goes over the top. But this one, I thought it was pretty good. I think I liked it better than his Undiscovered Country. And he pulls back from the over the top, you know, boom, bang, you know, look at these theatrics, the shock and awe. But I think you could very easily get back to it. We get a female protagonist, tons of world building. She drives a truck with lights, you know, kind of ferrying people from one community to the other. There's bad things that live in the dark. And if the dark gets into you, you'll become one of those creatures and they have to stay in the light. And that's the world.
The bad things live in the dark. And if you encounter them, bad things happen. That's the sort of solicit that makes me think, you know, I really don't need to read that.
Yeah, probably not. It's not for you.
So the fact you asked and you were surprised I didn't get it, I just wanted to clarify that.
That's true. Well, if anyone is a video game fan that's listening to this, there was a game that came out on my Xbox 360 called Alan Wake. And in Alan Wake, it was the same type of thing. There was like shadow creatures that would come out. You'd have a flashlight with limited supply of batteries. You have to shine the flashlight. That's like one of your weapons. So it just reminded me of the Alan Wake video game so much. The Nuclear Family came out. It was really solid. The second issue, that's from Aftershock, and it's almost like a time warp that's happening in there along with a nuclear war. It's very weird. Once in Future is solid. That's Karen Gillan. He took that comic over to Boom. One thing that I found out about Boom, which is really cool, is, and I was trying to figure out, why are all these creative teams going to like Boom or AWA or, you know, Aftershock, versus I thought Image was the way to do it. But what Boom and some of the other publishers are doing is they're actually fronting money for the artist so that they don't have to wait and save up months worth of money without getting paid, waiting for money to come in maybe 3 or 4 months down the road.
That makes sense.
I think that's really cool because it's really helping out the creative team for artists who can't afford to go without money for 3 or 4 months. I think that's really solid.
That's the biggest risk for doing indie comic and stuff. And having a publisher that's actually, you know, putting some skin in the game versus, you know, pay us money and we'll print your book. I mean, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah. Now, there were some others I enjoyed, but there was two more. Did you read Scout's Honor? Were you still reading it?
I am still reading that. I thought that was a good issue. Moved the story along a fair amount. But the ending has me wondering just how long the story might last.
It seems like it's wrapping up, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I'm not necessarily against that, but I was thinking it was going to be a longer story than six issues. I don't know.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was like, whoa, this is going to end quickly, possibly. But two that I really enjoyed, which I know you weren't getting, I enjoyed Unsacred, but that's not it. One is Year Zero, Volume 2, Number 5, which I thought was really great. It's a zombie thing. You probably wouldn't like it, zombies, but you get...
That's another AMA book?
Yeah, the AWA,
Or AWA, sorry.
Yeah. It's really solid. It's great. It's like... I can't think of his name, the guy who had a really good Green Arrow run, and he's writing X-Force and Wolverine right now. Benjamin Percy.
Okay.
He's writing it, and he did a really solid job on it. You get the viewpoints from four different characters in the same world. But the one that I wanted to tell you about, and you may want to consider possibly depending on which way it goes, and I will let you know, is Shadecraft. Okay, Shadecraft I thought was really good. It was a number one issue. I think it was Image. I honestly can't remember the publisher, but I believe it was Image. And it was the winning creative team behind Skyward.
Ah, okay.
We had talked about this.
Yeah.
And I do need to pick up the hardcover for Skyward. I really liked it. And this one's a little bit darker, but I wouldn't say it's horror per se. There's a little bit of, I guess you could say, a dark aspect in there because you have these, once again, let's say the shadows can come to life and they're kind of scary in the dark. You know, you don't know what's going to happen if they get you. And so she's always walking around with a type of light, similar to that other thing. But, you know, you're dealing with more with her as a teen, her antics, getting mixed up, trying to fit in. Shadows seem to stalk her. She has a brother that's in a coma. That is a very interesting plot point. I'm not going to go into why, but it's really cool. And there's a very nice hook at the end of this book, which made it very touching. And Joe Henderson, the writer, you know, the guy who's the Lucifer script writer, was writing at the end of the book, which was kind of cool. He's like, I purposely delayed this comic. And he said Skyward was such a high. It was getting so much praise. It was winning, you know, awards and stuff. And he said he wanted to give a little bit of time and give this title time to breathe. And he said it's almost like this title's trying to fight from the shadows. And it's just kind of, you know, clever, you know, with Shadecraft, it's dealing with shadows, how it's trying to fight for its time and place. So I just thought it was really, you know, clever write-up at the end. And it just has that same creative team, same artist, same writer, same everything, colorist. And it's not too dark. And if it does not get too dark, I'm definitely going to recommend you pick it up.
Okay, yeah, let me know how that goes.
But solid writing team. And it just gave me that good feeling of reading that same creative team that I was really enjoying before.
Cool, cool.
But those were the highlights, I would say.
Yeah, what else did I get? Crossovers was good. I picked up Firefly Brand New Verse number 1 to sample it. It was all right, but nothing that made me think, you know, wow, I've got to keep going. And kind of the hook there at the end.
Yeah.
Felt very much reminiscent of another hook of another story, like the pilot of Firefly, that it's like, you got to tell the same story and just a generation later. So I didn't pre-order any others and don't really feel the need to go with it at this point.
Yeah, like I'm done.
it's not that I'm done and leave it. It's just I don't need to continue.
Makes sense.
Radiant Black number 2 was good. I was hoping for a little bit more out of this Radiant Red character we get and stuff. Again, still trying to figure out where that title's going to shape up, where it's going to go. And then I got both Usagi and Usagi Yojimbo Wanderer's Road. And the Wanderer's Road issue kind of confused me because it was kind of a done-in-one thing. And at first, it seemed like it was going to be kind of a riff on Gru the Wanderer.
Yeah.
But it didn't really feel much like Gru the Wanderer at all.
Ah.
So, okay. Because there was even, you know, with apologies to, you know, Mark and Sergio, who guys who
did
do
Gru. Gru. Yeah.
Along with, you know, Stan Sky, who does the lettering or coloring. Or I guess he does the coloring. It's Tom Luth who does the lettering. Anyways. So I was thinking one thing going in, and it didn't really deliver on that, but it was all right.
Makes sense.
I think a lot of the comics for me this month were just in that kind of all right category. Some were a little overpriced and underwhelming, but there was not a whole lot this month that really made me think, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, I would say that too. The one thing I would say, I really like Shadecraft. I thought that was probably one of the best. I like Noctera, but I like darker things. And Berserker I thought was just kind of cool, but I mean, honestly, it's not a material even for me. But overall, you know, if I'm looking at all the books, I'm going to pull them all up. I look through them and it's about half of the stuff that I'm enjoying. And that's not that the other stuff is just horrible, bad. Maybe it was an off issue. But some of it, it's like, okay, when I start seeing the trend there and I line them up and I do a sort and I go by title, if I'm just seeing red, or, you know, just okay, it's like after 2 or 3 months, I'm like, okay, I gave it an arc. I really shouldn't stay on this anymore.
Yeah, you got to give it a chance sometimes, but if you're not liking it, get off. And it's funny because back when I was reading, 200 comics a month or whatever, you know, I'd have people ask me, you know, why are you getting all this stuff? It can't all possibly be good. And I actually had somebody ask me that face to face at Comic-Con, and it was a creator, and I'm like, well, you're right, it's not all good. And of course, I refrained from commenting on where his stuff may or may not have fallen on that category. Because I'm not going to say I'm the barometer of quality. I'm not. It's just what I like, what I don't. But the only way to find out if you like something or not is to have read it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I'm going to read some stuff I don't like, and I'm going to know I didn't like it. Whereas if I don't read something I would have liked, I'm not going to know it because I didn't read it to know if I would like it.
Very true. You know what? And you've read so many comics and you've done this long enough that you can tell almost by a solicit when they're coming out with a book if it's in your wheelhouse or not. And I think at this point in your life, you're like, okay, I want to stick with this stuff. Shadecraft, I understand why you didn't go there. It sounded kind of like a horror book. That's not what you like to read.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the same token, it's like there's things that you get that you think are great, and they kind of falter after a while. Maybe the art writer or the artist, I don't know, they lose inspiration or they got their attention, you know, divided. They're looking at something else. And it's kind of unfortunate, but sometimes titles start off so strong and then they just kind of go, they go awry. And at that point, it's like they lose me and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, well, sometimes they just can't land the ending, or it looked good on paper in terms of the concept and the solicit and stuff, but when you get it, it's like, yeah, it just didn't pull together.
Yeah. Or that 60-issue book maybe should have been like a 15-issue book.
Yeah.
I mean, you have that with some writers, too. It seems like they have the series going a little longer than it should have.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I'm definitely finding on stuff, is there's a couple of things. It's like, yeah, this is just a middle chapter. It's not bad, but I don't feel satisfied in and of itself, or this story is still going. So, you know, they get two shots a year to impress me in terms of the concept of the story, and maybe they make it, maybe they don't.
And I'll tell you what you just said right there is the most dangerous thing with DC. Because with DC, with them moving up their price point to $4.99 for all of their big titles, if you start getting two or three of those middle type issues where they're just so-so, it stings a little bit more when they're $5 than when they're $4. It stings a lot more than when they were $3. As the price creeps up, you become pickier because everyone has a budget, or you almost say, is it worth it at this point? And it may not be.
Well, and we talked about this when we were on with Eric and Sam and stuff when we talked about just the industry changes going on and stuff. But the fact that there's the backup feature means if you're not really crazy about that, you feel like you're subsidizing it to get the material you do want. And there's almost a baked in resentment on that.
Yeah. And that's how I felt with Wonder Woman, unfortunately.
Certainly how I felt about the Midnighter backup feature.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, the art style, I didn't care for it. I mean, there's when you start having those kinds of, well, I wasn't crazy about this, I didn't like that, and you can list off a couple of things, that's not a good sign.
It's not. So that's the one thing that worries me for them, is that I know they're going about this as a strategy, and maybe they thought this is going to work, and maybe it will work. You know, I'm sure they have people that are way smarter than me, I'm sure. But ultimately, me as a reader, right now, it's not working.
Well, I was all in, now I'm not.
Yeah.
So they've broken that habit, and now they're getting it to where I'm not only more selective based on the premise of the title, but also the format of the title.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to do, even at a hefty discount, a $4.99 book. That's expensive.
It really is. It's pricey. So, and like I said, if you ever, well, you don't have this problem, but I did have this problem. I used to bring my wife into the comic shop when I pick up my comics, and she'd see me hand them a little stack of comics, and the guy say, "Oh, that's $80," and she'd look at me like I was insane. Just the look from her is all I needed, because she knows how many of those things I have at home. And it's like at that point you're like, I start questioning my decisions at that point. I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean.
And how does that help the publisher at all?
It does not.
Yeah.
But these things are pricey, though, so you have to make them really good. Please make them exceptionally well if you're going to increase the price point.
Well, and at $5.99 or $4.99, a $5 price point and stuff, if it takes 6 issues, you're talking about $30 for a story. I mean, at which point you've bought 2 Blu-rays, I think.
Yeah, 2 Blu-rays. And
probably got better story and more time investment in those.
And the sad part is, at that point, I think it makes sense just to say, okay, we're moving to a book trade. Because I know what their trade paperbacks cost. I know what their hardcovers cost. If it's $30 for an arc, you're telling me as a consumer, don't buy this, buy this. And I don't know if that's what the way that they're trying to push me to go. That's fine. I'll go that way. Just, you know, rip the Band-Aid off.
I don't know that they really thought it through if that's where they want to push people or not, but I think that's the end effect some of this is having.
Yeah. And there are people like that. Like, on the Slack channel, Vermont Omnibro, he's a great guy. He's in our book club. I really like mm-hmm. him, Travis. But he was saying, we were just talking at our Peter David book club, and I was like, so what got you into trades versus comics? Because he used to read comics. And he's like, I needed to save money. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. And you start doing the math, you're like, yeah, I am overpaying. And so there's that almost delayed reaction where they wait to see what all the review sites say, or they listen to a podcast like this. We're the guinea pigs. We're the ones out there testing the stuff.
Yeah.
And they wait to see which books poison us and which ones are really good.
Well, yeah, they can get a lot more information to make the purchase decision on and such.
So they're enjoying a lot more than what we do is being a guinea pig sometimes. And I hate saying that, but I feel like I'm a guinea pig half the time.
Well, we had a couple of issues this time that, oh, it's taken long enough since the last issue, we fell out of the story and stuff. If you get the collected edition, you don't have that problem.
Yeah, Donny Cates Redneck is going to read great when it comes out as a trade. Me as a single issue reader, I have no clue what's going on now. It's unfortunate. He's a great writer, but it's unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
The May previews came out on April 28th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 162 is the morning of Saturday, May 8th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. And a quick reminder that we've also got the recommendation roundtable episodes going. The point of those episodes is to help people find other ways to spend their time. So send in pics of comic books, either older ones, back issues, trades, whatever, novels, television shows, movies, video games, if there's a board game you think people might really enjoy or something. Let's get that out there. We've got a lot of ways we can spend our time in helping people find things that they might be interested in. It's just a great thing to do. I've gotten a lot of clips from Billy Hogan. I want to thank him for that. It reminded me that I should really go reread Astro City and put a few other things kind of back on my radar, including a couple of novels he recommended. I've added those to my reading list. We'll see when I get to them. But we've got no deadline for these episodes. The way these episodes work is you send in one clip per pick, and that could be a particular book or video game or TV show, or it could be a series of books, anything that's kind of a unified thing. And when I get enough of those clips, I'll string them together, I'll kick out an episode. So that means if I get tons of clips, like when Billy sent me about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes of some great clips, that was enough for me to get two episodes put together, about an hour for one and about 45 minutes or so for the other. So that's what episodes 2 and 3 are. But if I don't get clips, it may be a while before that next episode comes out. And the reason I'm doing this is there are a lot of things hitting like the streaming services and stuff like that on not really a set cadence like we've got for the preview spotlight. So if you wake up one morning and say, you know what, there's a bunch of stuff I think people might enjoy, spend a few minutes, send in the clips, they get in the queue. And if it's another few months before you do the next one, that's great. But hopefully we have enough people sending in clips on a regular enough basis that we can be putting one of these episodes out every month, every other month, or something like that. So once again, the point here is just to recommend older comic books, novels, television shows, movies, video games, or anything else that doesn't really fit the format of the preview spotlight, but that you really want to kind of share your love of and encourage other people to check out. So once again, there's no deadline on those recommendation roundtable clips. It's an open invitation for everybody at all times. So please send in clips when you've got something you're thinking about and share the love.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.